Hockey! Tokyo! Australia! Germany! Africa!
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, it's a brand new week. It is the, second full week of April. It is the 10th day of April, 2017. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com is where we live. And you can just wander right on over there and be part of the madcap multimedia real-time extravaganza, the zany, wacky, real-time experience. That is the Horn chat room. Just go there, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in where you will be immediately greeted, joyfully even, by Anatole and Barkway and Hoghead and Jugapunch and Laborman and Steve from Georgistan and VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who being a third stage guild navigator on a lovely, albeit rodent second day in Northern California, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, yes, just before airtime, I received a note from Sparky telling me that Donnie the Rat was apparently Donna the Rat, and that she had, well, you know, baby rats. So, Sparky, you know, you may recall on Friday on the front porch, there was a sort of informal pool as to what to do with, and so Sparky's had a busy weekend. Murder. No. No. I'm a member of the Kill the Rats. Yeah, that's me. So it's no longer Donnie the Rat. It's Donna the Man Cave Rat, and Donna gotta go. Yeah, probably down to the vegan, cruelty-free, free-range, non-GMO. Rat sanctuary somewhere, you know, probably east of Berkeley or something. I kid. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is a listener supported broadcast operation. We have no advertisers. Some of them do really try to spread it around a little bit. I was out a little bit ago and I happened to be listening to National Petroleum Radio because it's the closest thing I can get to not right-wing radio in where I am. And I heard it. National Public Radio is supported by Lumber Liquidators. And just because I was sitting at a traffic light, I started thinking about what that word means. Lumber Liquidators. What does it mean to liquidate? It means to take something tangible and transform it into money. So they're proudly just saying, "Hey, we turn lumber into money. We turn lumber into money that you give us." So it's not just Rush Limbaugh they advertise on. But anyway, yeah. Well, Lumber Liquidators doesn't advertise with us, okay? Neither do just General Steel Buildings or some vacuum cleaner company that picks up bowling balls off Swedish mattresses and drops them back down again, and the mattress is made of such an amazing foam developed by NASA that it will not even cause you to move as you lie there waiting for your herbal erection capsule and your herbal hair regrowth tonic capsule to kick in and do, and you hope that, you know, it does the right thing in the right place. No. George Soros doesn't write us a great big money check every month or every year or every day or nothing. The limousine liberals aren't any use. The cruise missile liberals, no help. The only thing that keeps this broadcast operation on the air is you. Okay? So, we try to... We try to keep everything going, and we will, as long as I'm here, and as long as we can keep everything powered up. We'll try to raise $200 a night, and that will keep everything going and continue to make this the least liquidated radio programs going at something like 6.5 cents per hour for someone who. Kicks in at to the tune of $10 a month. Okie doke. Okie doke. So that's where that is. If you want to help out, the contribute tab is there at headonradionetwork.com. You click on that, and if you'd like to become a recurring monthly subscriber, like that. $10 a month person who pays, well, not pays, we're not selling anything. You can have it for free as long as we can keep this on the air. Because this is not a capitalist enterprise. This is not an enterprise. Shoot, this is more like the Kobayashi Maru as opposed to the Enterprise. Got to the obligatory Star Trek reference early this evening, didn't we? Just check that little box that says, and you know, we'd like to have 100 subscribers. We'd even more, we'd like to have 400 someday. A long way from it. But, you know, maybe not. Maybe someday. Who knows? But, you know, by the way, big thanks going out to our subscribers over the course of the weekend. You know, we knocked out Monday's fundraising on Friday, and our subscribers knocked out Tuesday's fundraising over the course of the weekend. So we're actually working on Wednesday, which is really cool. It's not very often that we have that happen. So thank you to our subscribers. Thank you very sincerely. And we'll try to raise $200 this evening and stay 2 days ahead, which would be freaking awesome. So there we go. If you don't want to be a subscriber, just don't click the box. Just fill out the easy little form, get to the next screen, and boom, you're done. If you prefer the U.S. Postal Service, and some people do, then the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Okay? In fact, speaking of subscribers, I had a note from Terrace. F you, Sean, after the message from Sean the other day, coming to West Virginia, blah, blah, blah. Terrace says, I'll double my monthly subscription to compensate for the loss of one member of the My Favorite Pony Mental Vomit-Powered Cavalry. Progressives shouldn't kid themselves. Even if the 48% who didn't vote had been forced to vote, Hillary's win margin probably still wouldn't have exceeded 3 million votes. 2016 was about racism and misogyny. Voting twice for a half-white, milquetoast, not angry Columbia law graduate doesn't make you not a racist. If you're a recovering Reagan Democrat, you're a racist. There is no cure. So, thank you, Terrace. Thank you very kindly. By the way, I had several lovely notes last week after filling in for Malloy Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It was very pleasant, and I enjoy the heck out of filling in for Malloy. And thank you for all the kind notes. I really do. I appreciate that. And welcome to the conversation. If you're here from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 Pacific Daylight Time, you'll get into the swing of things. This may not sound like the typical radio program at first, but you'll get it in time. It won't take long because this is a conversation among friends. This is a conversation among family. This is a conversation inside an actual little community that exists in the wilds of cyberspace. Okay? So that's all out of the way. Oh, guess what? As noted previously, it is the 10th day of April 2017. But, well, the 10th day of April just happens to fall on a Monday. And you know what that means.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. Here, just a few steps off the carnival midway, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, it's Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. We've got them all for you here. Friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, mothers and fathers, kiddies and cousins. They're all here for you. The birthers, the deathers, the ninthers, the tenthers, the baggers, the birchers, the booger eaters, the trumpansies. All denizens of the Republican Party, libertarians. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. They're right here, right here. And they are easily, easily, easily accessed for your amazement, your stultification, and, in fact, your nauseation. It happens. That's right, that's right. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this here is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. For less than 7 cents an hour, yes, for a $10 a month contributor, that 7.5 cents an hour gives you access to all the morons you could possibly ever want to find out about. So come on over. Come on over. Walk away from that futile attempt to throw ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in hopes of winning a little iguana that you can take home and I don't know do what with, but step on into the Moran Monday tent. Just remember, as you go through the usual advisory, please keep a close hand on children, pets, purses, wallets, European-style messenger bags, and yes, even the iguana that you won throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls, because the morons can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. And I ain't kidding. I don't know where to start. And this is without even y'all's nominations. And I'm sure you've got your own nominations, and we will open the floor to nominations here in about, 46 minutes or so, okay? Or a little over. But, my gracious sakes. Well, okay, so, let's start down in Talabama just because it's near and dear to my heart. Yeah. Looks like it's very possible that Talabama may be getting themselves a new governor because the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical governor, Robert Bentley, formerly a deacon of the First Baptist Church of Tuscaloosa, who turned out to be such a philanderer that even the Southern Baptists couldn't tolerate it. I mean, a lot of times they will tolerate that. Say, that's all right, Brother Bentley. You're not perfect. You're just forgiven. That's right. Just tell Jesus you're sorry about all that happening down there in Gulf Shores, and Jesus will forgive you, and you'll still be a deacon. No, they just threw his ass out. That was a year or so ago. Well, impeachment hearings were scheduled to open today in the Republican-held House of Representatives down on what they call Goat Hill, in Montgomery, Alabama, where the state capitol still has a star in the concrete, where Jefferson Davis, for whom our current attorney general was in part named, took the oath of office as president of the Confederacy. Now, they're proud of it. There's a star there, really. Yeah, I don't know why that hasn't been chiseled out and, you know, thrown in a toxic waste heap, but, oh well, because the South's going to rise again. Yes, yes. So, there, and it may have already, it may be happening now. The word used in this news story is tonight. And so in the Central Daylight Time Zone at present, it's 5:15, so it doesn't quite qualify as tonight. But it is said that Robert Bentley is prepared to offer his resignation at a cabinet meeting tonight. Jen Horton with WSFA-TV has tweeted, "I'm told Gov is being fingerprinted at the Montgomery County Jail. We're at the courthouse awaiting a hearing." Well, 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 well. Meanwhile, previously, Bentley had pleaded that the more sordid, because the sordid stuff apparently hasn't come out yet, the more sordid aspects of his tenure as what is being referred to as the Love Gov had not been publicly released yet. Now, when you're trying to figure out just exactly what sordid means, bear in mind that the audio has already come out of the recording in which he says to partner in rompin', that's what we call it here in the hills and hollers of West by Coal, Appalachistan, Trump, Virginia, rompin', as in him and her was caught a rompin' out there up the holler. In the recording, he says, "You know, baby, if we gonna do any more of what we done last time, we gonna have to lock the door." And he went on to say, "I love it when I get my hands up under your shirt and start to feeling on your Christ-centered evangelical breasts." And then proceeded to lie all over the place about it, as in like a rug. And the most amazing part of it is that these impeachment proceedings were being considered by a Republican held House of Representatives. Huh? I mean, it can happen. If the Republicans think that not doing something like that would result in this is a term from law school and a cliche. And if they think that it would result in their ox getting gored, they will act. So while I would not run and bet the fee simple possession of the mansion here on it at Harrah's in Reno, there is some statistical possibility, you know, right up there with infinite monkeys and infinite typewriters and one of them coming up with Hamlet, that the House of Representatives might, between now and 2020, actually impeach Donald J. Trump. But then again, he hasn't been caught talking dirty to a Christian paramour. He just got caught talking before the election about sexually assaulting women who probably weren't Christians. It's that Christianity that makes the big difference. Mm-hmm. So there's going back to, I said Donna the Rat.
James just wants to interject. Why not Ivanka the Rat or Melania the Rat or Kellyanne the Rat or Betsy the Rat? I hadn't thought about it in those terms. I was just trying. Right. Mm-hmm. But I get it. So, I don't know. We can discuss that if need be. And there's the news breaking via the Washington Post. The governor of Talabama, Robert Bentley, has in fact resigned after swearing up and down that he would not. He did. And has entered a guilty plea of some sort. Probably having to do with the lying and the lying that he did about the canoodling that he did. Yeah. Now, what I'd like to know, and it would be almost worth finding out, except for the fact that you'd have to talk to Trumpanzees and Republicans and so forth in Alabama. I'd like to know how many of them are upset about it. I guarantee you that somewhere in Talabama right now, some good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual is saying, well, it's everybody else. He just got caught. And by the way, the criminal charges filed against him were related to a little finagling over campaign finance. Really? There are still crimes that can be committed regarding politicians and money? Well, bust my buttons. He was booked at the Montgomery County Jail this evening with one count of failure to disclose information on a statement of economic interest, a misdemeanor. He was charged secondarily for failure to file campaign finance reports. And at that point in time, he decided to fall on his figurative sword. I remember, the first Republican governor in eons in Alabama was a guy named Guy Hunt, from somewhere down around Coleman. And he was a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical. And he was even a lay minister. And he didn't understand that as governor, he couldn't use the state plane to fly around to various and sundry camp meetings and preach the gospel on the state's dime. He, too, wound up in the stir. But don't worry. In this week of the Passion, Jesus forgived him because he was a Christian. And by the way, and some may think me mean for even saying this, I'll have to live with that. A pair of bombs went off in Egypt this weekend, when Coptic Christian churches were full to busting with people observing Easter stuff. The bad head loppers that we know as ISIS took responsibility.
the Coptics, the Coptic version of Christianity, you might recall. Or maybe you don't know. There are some people out there who are fortunate enough not to have been dipped by the heel in Christianity at a young age and spend the rest of their lives trying to get over it. But the Coptic version of Christianity was one of the earliest. One of the earliest manifestations of the success of the Jesus Church as a death cult. Been around for a long time. The Coptic Gospels, yeah. And so it was, in its own way, if you think back to 415 of the Common Era, Christianity had been adopted by Constantine some years earlier, what, 323? So it had been the official state religion of the Roman Empire for nearly 100 years. But the church didn't necessarily completely have control of civil society. And it all kind of came to a head, if you will, in the years surrounding 415 CE. And around 415 CE, those Christians, the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers of the folks who were sitting in the pews this past weekend, went absolutely hog-ass wild. Well, that's probably not the right term. Not hog wild. They just went homicidal. And they rampaged. And they murdered. And just by way of a reminder, you know, that high explosives really didn't exist back then, so they had to they had to do their murder at retail and not wholesale, these Christians. And so they took a woman by the name of Hypatia. And she was she was a woman, so that made her a daughter of Eve, which meant that she carried with her the burdensome mark of original sin. And beyond that, though, she, being Greek, was schooled in the Neoplatonic way. She was into mathematics and astronomy and understanding how the stars moved, and she philosophized, and she ran a school of sorts at Alexandria. And so it was that eventually the Christians came along and murdered the daylights out of her. I mean, they didn't just kill her. They tortured her. They flayed the skin off of her. Kidnapped her first. They kidnapped her. They stripped her naked inside the church. And then they slashed her to pieces, using potsherds and jagged pieces of oyster shells and roof tiles. And the men, and if that doesn't qualify as being mutilated, then, according to a historian, they mutilated her. And then they chopped her up and burned her arms and legs. just, you know, Egypt. Egypt. Christians. Religions of peace. You almost get the idea that the only way there's ever going to be any hope in that blighted land is if everybody finally looked up and went, hey, this monotheism thing ain't working out. Maybe we might all become rational and realize that there aren't any big bearded juvenile delinquents in the sky who want us to flay the skin off of women or violate them or blow them up. And in realizing that, well, damn, you kind of realize that it ain't never gonna happen. So, you know, that's just our little historic digression for the evening. A bright line between 415 CE and 2017 CE. Murder and mayhem perpetrated in the name of a God of love. So let it be written. So let it be done. Yeah. But we got more morans. Nobody's going to be surprised when I say that our next Moran nominee comes from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. They've got a page program in the Oklahoma State House. We've got one here in West Virginia. I remember when our eldest daughter was a page for one day. She was very excited. It was really fun for her to see how government works and everything. Well, that was like for six here, unless they've changed it, it's, you know, like sixth and seventh graders or something. In Oklahoma, the PAGE program is for high school sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And so there's this woman, Karen Kipjen, and her job in life is to supervise the PAGE program. What that means in terms of an actual, real, quotable job description, I got nothing. But because of this story, we can get a handle on what she thinks it means. And so, with the legislature in session, Oklahomans for Equality, which is an LGBT rights organization, visited the Capitol as part of Education Advocacy Day. Planned Parenthood was there too, and so were HIV/AIDS advocacy groups. And because there were going to be some gay people in the Capitol, Karen Kipjen, PAGE program supervisor, sent out an email from Karen Kipjen, Monday, April 10th, 2017, 10:42 a.m., to 4 North, 4 South, subject, Ladies' Restroom. As per the Speaker's office, Pages are being allowed access to the ladies' restroom across from 401 for today. Again, there are cross-dressers in the building.
The executive director of Oklahomans for Equality is Toby Jenkins. When Raw Story contacted him, he said, "I'm with about 70 traumatized students right now." When the email went out and they found out about it, they went immediately to the Speaker of the House, Charles McCall's office. He is, of course, a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelical. And, well, because he is a man of bold action and abiding courage, House Speaker Charles McCall was nowhere to be found. Except he left him a message saying, I didn't send that email. We're investigating whose office sent the email. Well, damnation, it says from Karen Kipchen. But the thing is, she says, as per the Speaker's office, pages are being allowed access to the ladies' restroom across from 401 for today. Again, there are cross-dressers in the building. And what he meant by that was that there were children with Oklahomans for Equality who were transgendered and gender non-conforming. Toby Jenkins said they've been visiting legislators and using the bathrooms they're comfortable with. Speaking about the cross-dressers in the building, language, he said, that's insulting and shameful. And went on speaking to his students and said, these are public bathrooms paid for by public tax dollars. We won't leave today without understanding this is the people's house. This is the kind of thing these kids deal with in the halls of school, not the halls of the Capitol. Now, bear in mind, just a story from the previous, from Friday. Bear in mind that the Iowa State Legislature is currently considering, well, they've sent the bill to the governor's desk, hell, it may have been signed by now for all I know, that will allow people to carry concealed weapons in the Capitol. I imagine you can probably already do that in Oklahoma, Stan. But it is a grave concern to people like Karen Kipchen and someone in the Speaker's office, although bold Speaker McCall hasn't figured out who yet, is right worried about where some teenagers might go potty. Not worried about guns, worried about pee-pee and poo-poo. And maybe lipstick on men, or perhaps eyeliner. Oh, Jesus, not eyeliner. Meanwhile, Jenkins described their day. He said some elected officials, when they saw the kids coming, literally ran from them. Oh, my God, it's trans kids. Run for your lives. You might catch the trans. And then how are you going to run in them high heels, Ralph Shorty? Nah, Ralph's gone. Now, he had to quit the Senate after that little bit of business with the 17-year-old that he wanted to have sexy time with, the 17-year-old boy, who he said he was gonna real good if he kept calling him daddy like that. Because Jesus. This might be, I do not know, this might be audio of an uncomfortable interaction.
You know how to do it?
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
So here are the terrorist trans kids walking upstairs. My God, it's so ordinary. But where do they go potty? Because Christians want to know. And there they are, being all LGBT, standing in what appears to be a rotunda. Oh, the humanity! There's somebody with green hair. Sweet Jesus.
That's the Senate.
And they're walking some more. And there's somebody with a short haircut.
Because we're over here. Can I tell? We're in here. So
Devin's suggesting as a musical accompaniment. Jesus loves the little fascists, all the fascists of the world. Thank you, Devin. Yes. Oh, they've slowed down in the hallway, the dangerous LGBT kids. You know what? There might even be some straight kids in there because they want to support their trans friends and their LGBTQQQ friends. You just never know. They're sneaky that way. And how do the straight allies go to the potty? That's what the Christians want to know. There they are, climbing stairs, leading Oklahoma to its doom, one marble step at a time. Any attempts, by the way, to reach Karen Kipchen, go straight to her voicemail. They're not answering the phone right now. They're scared. It might be a trans kid.
Should be Chamberside.
And they just asked some. Now they're getting directions. Oh no! And there's somebody with blue hair who isn't 90 years old. God Almighty, the flag is falling.
LGBTQ youth to the Capitol, and this year we came again to advocate for LGBTQ youth and especially school funding, because that's a real issue this year. But this year we got here and we're just going about our business visiting our legislators when we were told that there had been a message sent to all of the legislators in the building to be warned, be aware, there are cross-dressers in the building and you can use private bathrooms if you need to. We find that disgusting, and we're going to hold our speaker accountable.
Okay. That way.
We're going that way.
Do you want to make our way up?
Yeah.
So is it on this floor? No. 401.
Okay, I'm just going to stay by you guys.
You know, good for them.
Why is that an insult?
Exactly. And also, you can use private restrooms if you want to.
Oh, that, no, that, they were telling them that to use private restrooms because we're cross-dressers.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Wasn't it terrifying? Aren't you shaken to your very core? My God. What's happening to our democracy? Goodness gracious sakes alive. Karen Kipchen's Facebook page is busy blowing up right now, by the way. Not physically or literally. That's a colloquial term for saying that many people are posting many comments to good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Karen Kipchen, coordinator of the PAGE program. One woman, Ms. Leonard Gambino, said, "My daughter took pride in wearing a very nice professional suit today to meet with everyone at the Capitol. Your words, reducing her to a cross-dresser, are appalling. I demand you apologize to my kid." She's always been active in LGBT advocacy. She runs her school's Gay Straight Alliance group and is active in another youth group. She wants to major in political science and work in advocacy. As a mom, I want to protect her, but she wants to make a difference. The fact that these people have not even met her is upsetting to me. Well, don't go looking for Karen Kipchen's Facebook page. It's been deleted. Oopsie. If you go and look for Sarah Burris's story at Raw Story, LGBT students traumatized during Oklahoma Capitol visit when staffer warns of cross-dressers in bathroom. It's headlined. It's the feature photo there is a photo of Karen Kipchen. I welcome all comments from trans people on this, and straight and LGBTQ, anybody. But let's just say Karen Kipchen ought not be throwing stones in her glass house. That's all. Meanwhile, in Florida, there is apparently in Lake County a sheriff who is sort of doing his own homemade ISIS videos. Sheriff Peyton C. Grinnell has put out a video to the drug dealers. Oh, Devin's swinging for the fences tonight. They should hashtag Occupy Wrong Can. Oh, mercy. But back in Lake County, Florida, where Peyton C. Grinnell is the high sheriff, he shot a video standing at his Lake County podium, and he was surrounded by four guys in tactical military assault gear with their faces covered up so that they couldn't be identified. Just like ISIS does. Here's the audio. Jesus. I remember when we managed things like this by just having Barney Fife say, "Nip it! Nip it in the bud!" But no, this is 2017. We got to be rough and tough and butch.
I'm Lake County Sheriff Peyton Grinnell. Over the last month or so, I've had several phone calls from citizens in this county concerned about the number of overdoses related to heroin. I want our citizens to know that I am aware of this serious issue. I am asking our residents to please call and let us know if you know of a location that this poison is being pushed out to our streets.
Notice the music in the background? Bum, 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 bum. I mean, you almost expect him to do his Conan the Librarian voice and say, "And we want to hear the weeping of the women."
You can remain anonymous. To the dealers that are pushing this poison, I have a message for you. We're coming for you. As a matter of fact, our undercover agents have already bought heroin from many of you. We are simply awaiting the arrest warrants to be finalized. So, to the dealers...
Really? How long does that take, waiting for the arrest warrants to be finalized? And who does that? Maybe the four guys with their faces covered up, since they appear to be undercover or something, maybe they should be back at their desks finalizing the warrant so we can get the poison off the streets.
I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille.
Yes, Nadden.
You gotta wonder what kind of budget they've got for something like this. Your tax dollars at work. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dealers, I say, enjoy looking over your shoulder, constantly wondering if today's the day we come for you. Enjoy trying to sleep tonight, wondering if tonight's the night our SWAT team blows your front door off the hinges.
Yeah. Enjoy wondering if tonight's the night our SWAT team blows your front door off the hinges, and maybe there's a toddler playing with a toy truck by the door, and the toddler gets blown away with the hinges, too.
We're coming for you.
We are coming for you.
Told you.
If our agents can show the nexus between you, the pusher of poison, and the person that overdoses and dies, we will charge you with murder. We are coming for you. Run.
And then they all turn at the same time and walk away. Get all the music. Yeah, okay, we got all the music. Do you think the heroin dealers are out there just kind of trolling Peyton Grinnell's page to see the latest video that he's put up? And then there's the question of, because, you know, they get a pass, law enforcement does. We've discussed this in the past. There's this thing called the presumption of good faith in regard to law enforcement actions. So, when Peyton Grinnell and his apparently, obviously, high testosterone drug unit grenade through a door, because he said the SWAT team's going to blow the door down, after, of course, huffing and puffing, and blow your door down, if they just happen to have, you know, let's say it's apartment 2C and they accidentally go to apartment 2B because they're all in an adrenaline rush and they're going to get them a heroin dealer and a poison trafficker. And they get themselves in such a dither that they blow through 2B and say machine gun an innocent family to death. While the guy in 2C goes, oh, sounds like Peyton's here. Let's hightail it out the back door, fellas, while they're murdering our next door neighbors. Guess what? The courts will say, go and sin no more. It's okay, Peyton C. Grinnell. Yeah, you whipped your men up into a frenzy, and then they murdered some innocent people, but, well, it's their fault for being in 2B and not your fault for not hitting 2C. Gosh. Sucks to be them. Yeah, good faith. You were operating in good faith, weren't you, Peyton? I mean, that was good faith when you had the groovy martial music going on there, the grim minor key public domain bullshit you used. That was good faith, wasn't it? I mean, that was good faith when you had four guys in ski masks standing next to you, armed to the damn teeth, saying that you were by God ready to go get you some. That was good faith. Oh, absolutely, that was good faith. That's what we thought, Sheriff. And, of course, I'm, you know, just sort of a pain in the ass this way, but once again, we've got a heroin problem, and we're really, really serious about it now because it's a white heroin problem. I don't mean the heroin's white. I mean the people with the problems are white. But, once again, we're not asking the question, why do we have a heroin problem? Florida was the home of a whole bunch of pill mills in the last 10 years or so. I mean, we had OxyContin carpools running out of West Virginia to Florida to, you know, pick it up and bring it back. It really happened. It was real. Not kidding. And Big Pharma made big dollars out of that. Meanwhile, the people who actually needed the stuff couldn't get it because hillbilly. And they're not going to be blowing the door down, Peyton C. Grinnell, at the root cause of the problem, which is, of course, the pharmaceutical manufacturers. No, they're going to blow the door down on people selling heroin that is, of course, quite often laced with bathtub fentanyl, bathtub elephant tranquilizer. Because, well, capitalism, right? Be ready, Lake County, Florida. Mm-hmm. James with an email, subject line, warning dealers that they're waiting for warrants? Yeah, that kind of struck me too. No, we're going to be... Never worry, don't you fear, because Robin Hood will soon be here. As soon as the judge signs off on the warrant. I know. Brilliant, ain't it? Mm-hmm. So, there we go. I'd say that's a good opening taste of Morans, a soupçon of Morans for this here Moran Monday. You, of course, may have your own nominees. If you do, then, well, by all means, pick up the phone. You can reach the program on the stress line at 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. Or 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on the planet that you're not all firewalled off, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. It'll get you right smack dab into the program. So, as you see fit. Again, we try to raise $200 every evening. This evening is no different. We're actually working on Wednesday. And that may be why everybody goes, okay, yeah, we'll wait. We'll wait till we're in the hole again. But it would be nice not to. So, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, what have you. You know how it works. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
She asked for her mama's bathrobe and a pot of potato soup. She gonna dry out this time if it kills her. She wants the whole family in the loop. She can outsmart her dad like a stunt man. She's a cat with 99 lives. She's my heroin addict sister. And I've known her all my life. She's my heroin addict sister. And I hate to see her go. And I hate to see her holding on the end of the same old road. She pushes a tiny needle. It's like the devil's DNA. It takes her somewhere. She just gotta go, but can't afford to stay. She stripped for a while in Connecticut, been married and leaving. spy times. Every one of them it was crazy about her. So she married a couple of them twice. She's a certified underwater welder. She can cook, clean, and crochet. She can flash a smile from her sweet weary soul that'll melt all your doubts away. She's my heroine, Maddie's sister, and I hate to see her go. And I hate to see her holding on at the end of the same old rope. She's high at the homeless shelter when she's hanging out with my niece. She don't notice the holes in her clothes or perverted Orlando police. Been so mad I wanted to kill her. So worried I had to cry. Such crazy stories I can't help but laugh. So scared when she's gonna die. Caught outside of Atlanta, been dodging in big old trucks. You know she cleaned up in Tennessee one time before. She just needs a couple $100 and she just needs to be with us. We all say thank God mama ain't here to go through it this time. She's in heaven telling them, making county cops better give her baby a ride. And they got to her just in time. She's my heroin addict sister, and I hate to see her go. And I hate to see her holding on at the end of the same old road. The end of the same old road. Always at the end of the road.
2 minutes past the hour. Elizabeth Cook from 2010. And a really powerful album back then called Welder. You can tell from the aforementioned bumper. It is Moran Monday on the horn. Check in with a couple of emails along the way. Ron and Raleigh, because, you know, I know what it says already. Elephant Tranks, I tranquilized an elephant in my pajamas last night. What he was doing in my pajamas, I'll never know. Is there a great need for elephant tranquilizers in West Virginia? You know, that's a beautiful setup line, and I'm going to leave it alone. But the fact of the matter is that stuff is apparently cheap, and it provides... It's cheap and easy to make, and it provides a really, really big bang, as it were. And it just happens to kill people. I forget what profentanyl, porfentanyl, or something like that. Is that what it's called? Note coming in from Ron. Greetings from the no longer frozen north. I can identify. We had a little snowstorm Thursday, and it was gone by Thursday noon or so. That's the nice thing about snowstorms in Appalachia in April. It's the 10th of April now, though, and here in the studio, it's 82 degrees at 7.04 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's probably cooling off a little bit outside, but we got up around 85. Carfentanil. Thank you, Devin. Carfentanil. Fentanyl for cars. No, but that's what it is, carfentanil. We got right toasty today, and we're going to be warm all week, and we may just go straight from winter with a casual mention of spring and summer. Anyway, Ron says, greetings from the no longer frozen north. I'm so glad I live in a civilized country. Legislation will be introduced on Thursday to make the recreational use of marijuana legal in all of Canada, effective, mark your calendars, July 1st, 2018. So about, let's see, 1 year and 2.5 months from now. I have a feeling Canada's going to have to train up a few extra Border Patrol folks. And this will, of course, drive the Border Patrol absolutely batshit crazy in the U.S. The delay, that year and 2 months and a half, Ron notes, is to allow a regulated distribution system to be put in place. Can't forego those taxes, can we? Absolutely not. And also to allow cops to get an approved definition for impaired driving whilst under the influence of brownies. My theory is that the driver, high on marijuana, would be easy to spot. He, she would be the one driving down the road at 20 miles an hour while digging into a bag of Doritos. They sell those in Canada, do they, Doritos? Or do they have to be imported? But, no, I get that. Ron points to points humorously to a real problem, and that is this: the detection. It's one thing to detect the presence of THC in a system. It is another thing entirely to detect THC actively working on someone's current ability to operate heavy machinery. That's one of the things that makes pot such a matter of manifest unfairness in employment situations. Opioids can be gone in 4 days, meth, similar, booze the next day, acid, never even detected, cocaine, couple of days. Pot stays in your system for 28 days, so let's say you want to be a clerk at the local Rippy Mart. You have to pass a piss test. You smoked a doobie 27 days ago, and you can't have a job. It's just in the nature of the way the biochemistry of how the body eliminates cannabinoids from the system, and it tends to go resident in fat cells and protein cells. So, and Jesus, in the hair, they can detect it for 6 months or so. So it will be. I mean, it's a scientific curiosity. You don't know. Maybe we're working on it somewhere in the U.S. Maybe not. But that's the problem. You know, dealing with figuring out what constitutes impaired, where doobage is concerned. Yeah, the lowdown on carfentanil, as Devin points out, is it comes from China, not approved for human use. It's 1,000 times as powerful as morphine, and Devin says, or so I hear. And you know, and then there's the bathtub fentanyl. Ron points out another thorny issue will be when companies do their drug tests and decide to terminate an employment due to THC in their system. It's a basic civil rights issue that if both alcohol and THC products are legal and regulated, how can a company fire someone in one instance and not the other? Well, and apply that to any legal drug. Apply that to nicotine. Apply that to caffeine. Oh, but employers like caffeine because it keeps the employees nice and perky. Yeah. So you see how it's going to have to be worked out. I mean, it's not. And somewhere along the way, shouldn't there be proof that driving under the active influence of THC makes you an unsafe driver? There's abundant proof that driving under the influence of alcohol makes you an unsafe driver. But does that proof necessarily even exist with cannabis and cannabinoids and THC? I mean, as Ron joked, you know, going 25 miles an hour digging. Okay, the digging through the Doritos is distracted driving, but that's the same thing as checking, oh, Jesus, somebody likes something on my Facebook. Oh, crash. That's the same, and you can be as unimpaired as the day is long and still have the impaired driving problem or distracted driving problem. At some point in time, there's going to have to be proof that THC impairs one's ability to drive. Now, I guess you could say that maybe somebody who's stoned driving in, say, traffic that's doing a median 80 miles an hour, and they want to do 55, maybe that's... But that's not even impaired operation. That's a surfeit of caution. You know, there's a minimum speed on the interstates, like 40 miles an hour. And technically, you can get pulled over for 35 because it's deemed unsafe. But there's going to have to be some kind of findings of fact. You can't just say, oh, you smoked a joint, therefore we're going to yank your license. Although I suppose the temptation will be there for that too, because that's more revenue generation through indirect taxation. Okay, one more to share with you. Sean has written back. He keeps writing and swearing he'll never write again, and then he writes again. By the way, I'm going to the phones here just a minute. You're on hold. Stay there, please. Don't leave me. One final email, Sean promises. You keep saying Bernie would not have won. You're wrong again. This is why you are a Clinton apologist and utterly tone-deaf in regard to politics. Curiously, there's no supporting data, merely the assertion of an opinion. How do I keep saying Bernie would not have won? Well, it starts with the fact that Bernie couldn't win the primaries. I know. Goddamn DNC! No, it has to do with the fact that the South, and this wasn't something Hillary orchestrated, the devil. It was the fact that the South gets to pick who, for the most part, the South gets to pick who the front runners are, which makes sense for Republicans and no sense whatsoever for Democrats. But that's where her early bleed came from, because Bernie got the living shit thumped out of him all over the South. South Carolina, he had, and you know, don't trust me. You can talk to somebody like our buddy Eric Bjorn, who was right up in the middle of it all. Bernie had a terrible operation in South Carolina. I don't mean bad. I mean awful. I mean abysmal. And that's why he got thumped the way he did. He also hadn't campaigned there. He hadn't been working in and around the South for, you know, a generation. Hadn't established the name recognition. And so in the South, the core of Democrats are people of color. And because of the way people vote, as we saw, older people. And they weren't going to sign on with somebody they barely knew, because, oddly enough, older black folks in the South have not spent the last year or last 10 years listening to Tom Hartman's Lunch with Bernie every Friday. And so they gave their votes in Alabama and Georgia, in Florida, in North and South Carolina stan, in Tennessee stan, in Arkansas stan, in the whole Confederacy. They gave their votes for the most, almost exclusive, not exclusively, but they went to Hillary. And so Bernie lost by a couple of million votes in the primary system before you can even get to anything being rigged. He just lost. I mean, I understand some of this, but at this point in time, pissing and moaning that Bernie could have won is a little bit like Boston Red Sox fans still being obsessed by that slow roller that went through Bill Buckner's legs over at first base a couple of decades back. Three. Yeah. 31 years. Move on. As long as you're fighting the last battle, you're not going to be ready for the next war. Clinton apologist. Jesus Christ. I spent months advocating for Bernie on this program. And in my life. But this is the thing the Sparkle Ponies don't do. They couldn't live with what Bernie told them to do after it was over. Bernie said, I'm supporting Hillary. I want you to, too. Curiously, he said that before the primary started, too. If I don't beat her, I'm going to support her. But the Sparkle Ponies want none of that. But I'm tone deaf in regard to politics. Meanwhile, the Bernie Sparkle, the Sparkle Ponies, not even going to use Bernie's name in there because Bernie's not responsible for this. This is just political naivete. The Sparkle Ponies they're basically telling African American voters in the South that they were wrong, and maybe that they were duped. I don't know what they would say. In that very, very privileged place where they live. Sean continues, and how did Trump start World War III by dropping a few bombs on an airbase which was back up and running within 24 hours? Oh, sure. Then how was Hillary going to start World War III when she didn't do nothing at all? Yes. She wanted military action back in 2013 when Barack Obama was having to stand up to his entire cabinet not to do it. Granted. But that does not create an a priori situation. Syria is a mess that cannot be solved with bullets or missiles. Any more than you can copulate your way to virginity. Sean says, oh, by the way, I was not threatening you with physical harm, Steve from Georgia, Stan. I meant that I could annihilate you in a debate. Well, you keep trying via email, and you're pretty much 0 for 3, Sean. Like I said, Trump is a short-term problem. And Neil Gorsuch is only one justice. Yeah, only one justice who agrees completely with 3.5 to 4 others, which is enough to create a, big word here, majority, which is enough to craft an opinion. Neil Iceman Gorsuch. Another ball dropped by the weak and ineffective Democratic Party. Neil Gorsuch, I suppose. Wonder how they dropped that ball. What, were they supposed to, like, go and beat him up or something? Maybe Bernie was supposed to give Neil Gorsuch a good talking to. God damn the simple... Simon Simple and Simon Pure. The weak and ineffective Democratic Party couldn't even get a Republican to have a cup of coffee with, Merrick Garland. Mm-hmm. Another ball dropped. When they didn't even have the ball. People are going to stop donating to the Horn if you keep alienating your listeners.
Yeah, okay, Sean.
You know what? That is not a threat that particularly consumes me. We've been here for a good bit over 10 years. And in point of fact, Sean, just so you'll know, you've been a fundraiser, buddy. I mean, did you not hear Terrace's note earlier? Yeah. Yeah, I know. Asa says, Sean's trolling you, Bob. Sure, but it's fun. For instance, subject line, Unicorn Brigade, David in South Carolina, Stan. The Unicorn Brigade's latest is to blame the nerve gas attack on Hillary Clinton. Also, she's actually running Donnie's administration. Backed him for the election. Plus, those plans for attack in Syria have been drawn up for years. That's what people do at Pentagon, draw up plans for military action. They offer the president an array of choices. He asks opinions, and then he picks one. I know. Don't get too far in the weeds. They tend to fall down and get lost there. Michael in Madison says, Neil Gorsuch is only one justice. Yeah, says Michael in Madison. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is immortal. Ta-da. Yeah, that's the big hot rumor that was circulating today after Neil Gorsuch managed to put his hand on a Bible and not get burned, is that now it's safe. Donald Trump has proven to Anthony Kennedy that it is now safe for he, Anthony Kennedy, to retire because he's 80. And let Comrade Kumquat, our short-term problem, by the way, our short-term problem. I don't know, but we are, let's see, got to do the math again, so that's 11. That's 39. And 40, 70. We're 80 days into our short-term problem, and our short-term problem has already created a bunch of long-term problems. By the way, he's got the fleet steaming toward North Korea. Hillary would start World War III! Jesus. And Clarence, by the way, points out, please tell Sean that if Bernie had won the nomination, the hit list that the opposition had compiled would have been released. Jew and socialist would have been compliments. Move on, sir. Move on. Yeah, the Bernie opposition research notebook was over a foot thick. That's a lot. Yeah. Oh, I can't remember. Ron in Raleigh asks, who was the UConn basketball player a few years back that came out saying he was high during the Final Four? I remember that, just can't remember the name. All right, enough. As Clarence said, move on, sir. Move on. Let's run over and check in with Todd down in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, Todd.
Oh, what's going on, Bob?
Sup?
Listen. You covered a lot of interesting issues, but to the heroin thing, you know, I think you keep understating the fact that we couldn't seem to leave Afghanistan, and then we got all this cheap heroin all of a sudden.
Well, that's you know, behind that. Yeah, that's at the bottom of it all. Yeah, we had actually given tens of millions of dollars to the Taliban government in thanks. Mm-hmm. And in support of their heroin poppy, opium poppy eradication efforts. And then when we decided that dim leader needed to get his war on, we uh, we drove the Taliban out of power, who were a bunch of goddamn brutes. Okay, let's be clear about that. But they were they were really good at I mean, see, we have this sort of nebulous policy as to headloppers. We liked the Taliban headloppers as long as they were we could tolerate them headlopping the occasional female for daring to show a toenail in public, as long as they were headlopping opium poppy warlords.
They weren't fond of the you know. Well, go ahead.
But the problem is that when they headlopped an opium poppy warlord, there was a junior warlord, because you know they've got the, they've got a junior warlord's a training program over there, who stepped into his place.
Got to.
Right, and so when we got rid of the Taliban, we got rid of the headlopping of the warlords, and they immediately went to work, hand over fist, hammer and tongs, sending bricks of really, really good heroin into the United States.
The likes of which we hadn't seen.
In decades.
The good shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff that Keith Richards would have been proud to use back in the day.
You know what I mean? Because back in the day, you know, it's so funny because at my, you know, at a certain age I am, you see all these old movies like The French Connection and stuff. That was bullshit compared to what we're getting now, apparently. I mean, I'm not even talking about carfentanil. I'm just talking about how that shit was coming. And the reason I'm bringing this shit up is I was reading the Inky this morning. So Dr. Oz is going to do a tour of the neighborhood I lived in for 1 year over in Kensington. And because it's just so, it says like 500,000 needles on the ground. You know, it's like these railroad tracks. But it's been like that for decades and decades, you know. And matter of fact, Steve Lopez wrote a book about it, Third and Indiana. It's a very interesting book. You know, and it's history as much as anything else. But so, yeah, so that's what you keep saying. You know, I don't think you've mentioned that enough because, I mean, it's really ugly. And, like, my theory on that is, like, well, just like in Vietnam, you know, it only takes about five, maybe, I don't know how many, but it takes a certain node of people, certain nodes, you know, like people keep strategically placed people to get that stuff out of there, just like they did in Vietnam. You
Well,
it's not like a big.
Yeah, it didn't all come over. You know, it didn't all come over in somebody's guitar on the way home.
Hell no. Nope. That's logistics, you know. And that is Sinaloa people, they're growing it too, you know, so they got us on both ends. You know, I think that they figured, well, if we don't get this money, then the Soviets are going to get it because it's closer to them. Because I remember being a teenager in the 80s when that good Afghani bud was coming over here. That's the skunk. Boy, it looked like golf balls. And, you know, it was coming over right when we were in Afghanistan, you know, before, you know, when the Soviets were over there, you know, before we jumped in, if you know what I'm talking about. I don't know. Remember in the '80s when the Soviets were fighting the Afghanis?
Yeah. Well, how is it that every time, and tell me if I'm wrong, how is it every time we get involved in one of these wars of choice in a place we have no business being, we wind up bringing a nice Jones home? I mean, I'm thinking about the history that I've read. And there were plenty of problems coming back from the South Pacific and from Europe in World War II. But I don't remember, I've never read about a whole lot of, you know, drug problems, except for maybe wounded soldiers who picked up a Jones because they needed the morphine that to kept them from, you know, losing their minds with pain.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Vietnam, we get a drug problem. The Reagan years, El Salvador, we get the cocaine problem.
Right.
Afghanistan, heroin problem. But underneath all of this is the undeniable reality that we're having a hissy about it, because it is affecting the white community. You
right.
know, there was a time when heroin was a problem that, you know, rock stars had, and that was pretty much the white folks who had heroin problems. Artsy types, you know. But, you know, heroin was a black people problem, a Mexican problem. It didn't get into respectable neighborhoods.
Well, you know what? I've heard the people bandying this it's not a theory, it's a fact. And you know, I've been holding back because it just gets me angry. But you know, when I was like 19, 20, 20, whatever, you know, when that when the crack scourge started, it was all about lock them up. Fuck it, you get caught with one little rock, you're going to fucking prison.
You're gone. Yeah.
Remember, you're done.
And only during the Obama administration did we begin to acknowledge that there was a big difference between a black guy getting caught with a hunk of rock of rock crack of the same, you know, and a white guy gets caught with the same mass of powder. The guy with the rock goes up. The guy with the powder, you know, gets treatment.
Exactly, and it, you know, it's a big exactly.
But underneath that, Todd, there's something else, and this would be an appropriate time halfway through the program to offer my sincerest congratulations to what I think of as, you know, my newspaper. I'm proud of the work that the Charleston Gazette does. They're a good small market. They're a great small market newspaper. They're they're circulated all over the entire state. Guess what?
What?
They won a Pulitzer today. My little hillbilly newspaper won a Pulitzer today.
I'm going to read it tomorrow. That's great. I hope that's great.
And if you want to keep up with news in West Virginia, wvgazette.com is the website. 10 free articles a month. And I try to go and buy a dead tree version of the paper every morning just to help out. But they won a Pulitzer Prize, and particularly a reporter by the name of Eric Eyre, E-Y-R-E, won a Pulitzer for his investigative reporting, which the Pulitzer cited as fearless, of the opioid crisis in West Virginia.
Good.
And now all we need to do is get Ken Ward Jr. a Pulitzer, and justice will have been served. You want to talk about fearless. Ken Ward has been absolutely fearless in reporting on the Freedom disaster, in reporting on the predatory practices of the coal industry. So I've been saying, you know, when does this guy get a Pulitzer? I've been saying that for years, but I'm really proud of it.
We need strong press.
And as far as a strong press is concerned, the Gazette is all we've got. There's no strong press.
Really?
There's no strong press going on in the TV news. Oh, Jesus!
No,
it's practically unwatchable. But I'm really proud for Eric Eyre, and he uncovered the really nasty tentacles that this thing has running into the Republican government. The biggest pusher in the state, for all intents and purposes, has been, from a legal standpoint, the actual Attorney General of West Virginia, whose wife is and has been a lobbyist for a manufacturer, one of the manufacturers of the opioids that sent the 400 pills per person in West Virginia into this state.
That's what I was going to ask you about, because you have been hammering in on other people that actual frightening stat. That is insane. I mean, that you can't. I mean, it will be hard for a rational individual to make sense of that. That's crazy, because even if you have the worst of surgery, you need a week's worth of pills if you do what you're supposed to do. Maybe. All right. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn.
I don't think you are. There are legitimate uses for them, and those legitimate uses are damn near impossible to address now. But the thing is, and Eric Eyre did a good job with this, The thing is, right. The problem begins before Afghanistan or before September 11th, 2001. Okay? The problem begins with what I think, at least in the medical community, was a good faith effort to understand pain. And so they developed this pain scale. And to this day, at least around here, if you go into the ER and you say, I have pain, they'll say, how bad? And they'll point to a chart on the wall that's got a series of 10 little circular from a smiley face, one, no pain, to number 10, which is like, you know, growing Satan horns and the eyes are all scrunched up and the mouth is like sideways and screaming and... And, you know, how bad's your pain? Is it a 1? Is it a 10? Is it a 6? And you know, that was used to try to get a hand. And then so they begin to treat not just acute pain, but chronic pain with opioids. And that ain't inappropriate either.
Definitely. Are you kidding?
That's not inappropriate.
That's antithetical. That is antithetical. That's like last resort. Because we know this habit forming like physically.
But so if you've got pain that's going to be with you for the rest of your life, and you're not going to have any surcease of it, I don't know anybody that won't trade the Jones for the pain. But
well,
then,
see, that's where the cannabis comes in. That's
well, but then the problem gets knottier because of tolerance. Remember just the evidence that came out. Remember when America's truth detector, Rush Limbaugh, was chewing them up for the refreshing burst of flavor? Remember the story that went out that he would give his maid a cigar box full of cash and she would bring him back a cigar box full of pills?
Yeah.
I mean, the stories are legion out there of people who get who become tolerant, and they have to take more and more and more to achieve the same effect because of the way it works with the pain receptors and all of the other biochemistry in the brain and in the nervous system. So that does become a problem. But the problem becomes particularly worse, at least as far as I can understand the situation, when you live in a place where the economy is based almost entirely on physically demanding, physically dangerous, manual labor.
Bad back, bad knee. Oh, I'm in so much pain. Oh, wait a minute.
You know a guy works on a...
Maybe I can...
Have you ever seen these giant-ass dump trucks they use on a mountaintop removal site where the tire is as tall as a house? Just the tire?
Yes.
Okay,
it makes you feel like a little kid because it's like, oh.
Okay, so those things run on diesel, and coal companies hired diesel mechanics to keep their shit running. So you're way up in the air, working on one of these diesel engines, and let's say you fall, you're fucked.
Oh, on those rocks.
Or let's say you don't. You're just bent over and you turn the wrong way.
But wait a minute.
And your back gets screwed.
Things, you're like 20 feet off of the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're standing up, that's 20 feet.
I mean, the garage you would have to have to take one of those things in and put it on a lift like they do, you know, when you're changing your oil or whatever.
Right.
Would be as big as a goddamn airplane hangar.
Yeah,
so
people haven't seen these trucks. They're it's nothing like these. It's
mind-bogglingly
it looks
huge.
Like it's fake.
I mean, the trucks are as big as houses.
Right.
And so you got people who work on those and ruin their bodies. Or let's take the coal miner underground who spends his working life bent over working in 3-foot coal. Okay? That will take a toll. Or the single most dangerous occupation in West Virginia, working in timber, where it ain't nothing to lop off a digit or an arm.
What is, it's in the top five lumberjacking, I believe. Timber industry is in the top five of the most dangerous occupations, I'm pretty sure. I know you had that.
Yeah, video. I mean, and last I checked, timber was the most dangerous occupation in West Virginia. But hell, it doesn't have to be anything like that. You can ruin yourself working for Wally World, unloading massive pallets of merchandise. This is, you know, this is the world of the working person. And this is the world, for instance, that Republicans ignore when they talk about Social Security, Todd, and they say, well, you know, Mary, we got to do something about Social Security because it wasn't designed for these times of ours when people are living longer and happier and healthier lives. Well, dipshit, you millionaire mother, you've never seen the happy, prosperous, healthy lives that are lived by somebody who spent 30 years in Walmart. Well, it ain't
that's
pretty.
The pain relieving cannabis works. And I mean, just if you know anything about how opiates work, of course, you build up tolerances. And it's definitely not appropriate unless you're on your deathbed for long term, unless there's nothing else available. But there is. It's just not legal. And it does work, especially the way.
What
happens now?
You
get a good plant and you clone it. And that's how you clone a good plant.
Your point is well taken. And we're probably going to have legal medical marijuana here in West Virginia. But guess what? It's still going to be illegal to smoke it.
Well, that goes back to George Wallace Jr. we got. This dude is out of control already.
Our bill passed, and if you can be certified by your physician to have something really, really god-awful, like you're dying, then you can have a marijuana pill, or you can have a cannabis tincture. Mm. But you can't just sit there and spark up.
You know, we should be so.
Because the friends of Jesus are afraid somebody might actually not just have pain relief, that they might enjoy it, and Jesus doesn't want that.
You know what? These same people. They love Jesus and they love God and all that, right? You know, but guess what? If using that logic, God put that here. You don't have to go to any chemical factory. You don't have to go to a lab. You know what I mean? All you do is tend to your plant, let it grow, hang it upside down for a little bit, trim it, nothing to it. So using their logic, they should be happy that it works. You know what? If it doesn't work for you, you know, nobody's going to make you do it. Back up. Don't hate on other people who need relief. Because it does work, we all know that. Hangover, you know, you can do too much of anything. But my God, let's just be rational here. Because we have this pharmaceutical industry and even like the old people I take care of, they need these pain medicines. And when they changed that rule, they printed me out. It was an 8.5x11 script, and I could not even fill it. I had to drive 70 miles round trip the first time. So I had to call, and I was like, look, this is out of control. I'm not doing this. This is ridiculous. This woman needs her pain medicine. Nobody around here is a drug addict. Don't hobble us because other people have substance abuse problems. It's not my fault. It's like, open up the market. Open up the market.
But the free market doesn't apply to that because Jesus. I mean, can you imagine what the world had been like if they would have let Jesus spark up before they crucified him? I mean, it probably wouldn't have hurt near so bad, and people wouldn't have gotten saved.
Don't make their problem.
Don't you hate me when I do shit like that?
I like when you express yourself, and that's what the horn is about, and that's why people are happy that your fundraising is and your membership is picking up. Because I think you're resonating with certain people. You're not going to hear this kind of radio because you let people express themselves. And one other thing I want to say about this heroin, the crazy part, one of the crazy parts, is that when the junkies find out who's dropping dead, they gravitate to that stamp. In a lot of places, it's got like a stamp on it. You know, it'll be like a smiley face or,
yeah,
you know, it'll be like Trump, you know, and they want to know who's got the best dope. And they go out early in the morning because the best dope is in the morning and it's cheaper. But,
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? You didn't know that?
I don't know anything about the heroin trade. I've never been anywhere near it.
Oh, man. You should live on... Well, I lived on I Street, which is right up, right near the Erie L stop. I'd never seen it, man. It's a whole subculture. The junkies get out because they're functional, man. They're like fucking lawyers and doctors and shit. And you see them out, and they go and cop early in the morning, like 6:30, 7 o'clock before they go to work. So they don't get dope sick.
No, that would make sense.
You know, because later in the day, like when you go and cop dope late at night, it's more expensive. And then you might not know what you're getting because the good dope is gone early.
Yeah, but just to finish that one train of thought, so the opioid crackdown comes, and somebody with a narcotic problem is not going to go, okay, I can't get my script anymore. I guess it's time to get clean. Because of something that William S. Burroughs identified in Naked Lunch called the algebra of need. And it boils down to, you would too. And so, okay, I can't get my pills anymore. Hey, suddenly heroin is here. Well, okay. And then, and let's remember what heroin is while we're at it. It may be anecdotal, but maybe it's not. Back in the late 1800s, the chemical whizzes at the German firm Bayer developed two new miracle drugs. One,
methamphetamine.
No, one was something that they called heroin, and it was amazing in its ability to block pain, but it had a problem addiction component. The other was something they had discovered called salicylic acid.
Oh, aspirin.
Aspirin. The wonder drug that works wonders. And because the addiction problem wasn't there, they put their efforts behind aspirin. And to this day in Germany, you cannot buy aspirin without paying a humongous price for it, as it explained to me several years ago, because it's a trade name for the Bayer product. You can buy salicylic acid, but not aspirin. It's not a generic term over there. But that's where heroin comes from, because before then there was, you know, morphine maybe. And there was certainly opium. But no. Not that. And so heroin goes underground. But you're absolutely right. When it's clean and it's pure, yeah, doctors, lawyers, bankers, accountants, what have you. And as long as they get their fix and don't get junk sick, they're okay.
Well, see, it's a subculture, because what happens is that they get, people are quiet about it because it's like, who wants to say you're a junkie or whatever? So they go to the same dealer, and dealer's usually addicted also, and they got a good supplier, and that's why they keep going back to them, because it's not, in other words, the heroin won't kill you. It's what they cut it with.
Right. I mean, if you read Keith Richards' autobiography, and I started and I didn't finish. But in that book, he credits his survival to the fact that he always made sure he only used high-quality, medical-grade heroin.
See?
But it's and the thing is, what it's cut with now is stuff like what Devin was talking about a few minutes ago, Todd, carfentanil, which is, you know, elephant trank.
See, and you know, I don't know. There's so many. You could really develop a conspiracy theory around that. I mean, there's a lot of it's money, but look, between that and the pills in your area, a lot of areas, they want people all numbed out. They don't want people to be active. They want you just to not be around. And they are just dumping stuff left and right on non-conscious folks. We have to be conscious. And that's why we have to fight for the rights of cannabis. Because it does work. It does. It takes people's pain away. And remember, you know, it's not that new, of a research. However, remember, we have natural cannabinoids in our body. And I don't know, like, I've smoked pot before, and I'm telling you, people get high the first time they smoke it.
And right? A lot of people don't.
And a lot of people don't. And that, you know, that what they're, you know, they quite possibly has to the endocannabinoids. Just like you have, I'm not going to get too deep.
You got to flip the switch.
But yeah. Right. Some people just don't have enough in their body, and they get high. You know, I don't know exactly the mechanism how it works, but we have receptor sites, just like we have natural.
Oh, look, I'm such a lightweight. If somebody 2 miles from me sparks up a stem, a seed, and two little leaves, and I get a whiff of it, I'll be like, whew, and just walking around behind the little animals. I've just been away from it for so long. I'm not passing judgment or anything, but you know, the newer stuff is really stunningly, amazingly powerful.
Which is probably a good thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, because smoking anything is not good for you. It's not good to inhale smoke.
No.
So the less smoke you're inhaling to get, you know, a buzz or pain relief or whatever, the better off you are. Now, me, I saw a note from our buddy Tim from L.A. saying somebody had had a little too much edible and became sort of not functionally high.
He read my mind. That's where go finish, because that's where I was going.
Edibles don't speak to me. And it's the same reason pills.
Are you serious?
Yeah, pills don't speak to me either.
What I always
enjoyed about cannabis was the social aspect of it. You know, the here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being with people. And I just
the circle.
Don't, yeah, I just don't see how you go, okay. I mean, I can't see passing a brownie.
Well, the edible.
Or,
thing,
okay,
I'll
like,
be honest.
Here, lick, okay, I'm licking the lollipop. Your lick.
Right. Man, when you get real high on anything, it could be if you smoke cardboard or you drink liquor or whatever, when you get really high, really, really high, messed up, that's a selfish act because you're taking yourself out of society, you're taking yourself out of your normal self. It's kind of a selfish thing. Maybe you're doing it for a certain reason, blah, blah, blah. But the brownie thing, what I'm saying, the edibles, that is, oh, my God, listen, when they say, Check yourself, even if you're experienced, they mean that, because it does not take much. It's going to take like 25, 30, 40 minutes to kick in, but when it does, it's going to go on back.
It'll kick your ass, yeah.
And it will kick, you'll be laid down, so it's different. It's different.
Well, and see, so that's the problem, too. I got no business near edibles. I got no business near edibles because something else happens to me called the munchies.
Oh, Bob,
I don't need to have the munchies in a room that's going, okay, I'll eat another one. No.
Are you not processing fat? Because, you know,
I ain't processing food. I'm not processing food. I'm just, you know, living on air and love.
Manna. All right.
So, you know, I mean, it's not like I don't have an appetite. I got a whopping good appetite, but it ain't worth being doubled over in pain and, you know, missing work.
Well, I just asked because you're sounding strong. And
thanks. I appreciate that. I mean, I think I'm getting used to it. And I've learned that there are things that I can manage and things that I can't. So
I'm getting a pretty solid protein dose through low-fat cottage cheese and low-fat yogurt. And Steve from Georgistan sent me a picture of the yogurt aisle at his local grocer the other day, and I wrote back and said, and I'll bet you I've tasted 95% of them. Like I said the other night, ooh, it was a big deal for me. I found a new yogurt flavor at Kroger the other day, pomegranate. Little did I know that they didn't, I guess it's kind of hard to seed a pomegranate, but, so it's like the little pomegranate pips or whatever with the flesh still around them, but the seeds are still there, and it didn't speak to me. The flavor was good, the consistency, wrong.
Wow. Well, I don't know how you're doing it, but, you're sounding strong, and I don't know what to say.
Well, I try to reserve my strength for 3 hours per evening. There are a lot of naps involved.
Feed the resistance. That's right. You got to feed the resistance. There is hope. I know you got to go, but seriously, we have to. I think the people who think like we do, people who listen to this station. Wait a minute. Who? I'm trying not to be personal, but I think this person that you've talked about. I'm not even gonna say his name, but this, you know who you were reading. Maybe he wants an audience with you. there's a couple different ways I can go with it, but what I'm saying is that maybe he wants to have his voice heard. I don't know. Maybe he wants to debate. Maybe not.
Well, he keeps trying. He keeps losing. So,
yeah, you don't want to deal with that. But anyway,
I get it.
I'm calling from Hummus Central, so that's all I can say.
Hey, do y'all have Food City in South Carolina?
Is that a discount supermarket?
No, it's just a big, humongous grocery store, and they got an East Tennessee and up into Virginia. And well, I just knew that's one place because it's the season. It's even more the season for you than it is me, but it's the season for me here. The time is upon us. Barbecue season is here.
Don't you know that's what I've been? You know I've got all that good pecan. Oh, Bob, that's what I had relatives come down from New York, man. Oh my God, you would love this. Oh my God, man, they didn't want to leave. They said they were coming for 2 days, and they stayed for a week and 2 days.
Because you kept cooking, didn't you? You kept cooking.
Damn right. Well, that's what you got to do, man.
Well, no, I just and this isn't a smoker thing. This is just on the grill, off the grill. You got to get a package, dude. You have got to get a package of Kaneka. You just got to. Somebody there, go to the Kaneka Sausage website. Look up the list. It's got to be in South Carolina.
I remember
Carolina.
You said that. You said the pig has it. You told me the pig has it, right?
I think it does.
Well, look, I did kebabs. I'm really big into kebabs now, too.
Oh, but you can do hell. You can do hellacious kebabs with Kaneka. Whoa. Oh, man.
Now. I'm trying to get you on this hummus, though, man. See,
I'm a hummus guy. You know that.
I mean, there's so many different flavors, though. I'm telling, man.
Okay, what's your nearest community?
In terms of what?
To where you're living. Nearest town.
Oh, big city? Columbia.
Florence? Or?
Oh, no, I'm closer to Columbia.
Okay, Publix in Columbia, Kaneka.
Oh, Publix is high school. Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, they got Kaneka.
Oh, I see. Oh, you pulled it up. I got you now.
Yeah,
okay,
I pulled it
great.
Up. This is a full-service radio program, Todd.
Because I remember we talked about that, and you said it was an Indian name. I still have a memory. I don't know how. Yep.
I mean, goddamn, you can get this stuff in New Hampshire, and I can't get it in West Virginia? You can get it at Loon Pond Farm in Gilmanton, North New Hampshire.
Oh, you know what, man? Somebody has to send you on a trip to Trader Joe's. Not only that,
you can get it at the Fort McCoy Commissary in Wisconsin, and I can't get it in West Virginia.
But you can get 400 pills of Oxy that you'll never use.
Shut up.
Hey, man.
They'll let those goddamn Trump pansies in Indiana have it, and I can't.
So what's your? Give me some long term stuff, man. What's up with this?
What?
Your issue here. With the digestive tract.
I don't know. The issue is I got no health. I got no access to health care coverage. So I got no access to doctors, and this thing just goes on being what it is until I die.
I thought you had the affordable health care.
No. Not anymore. Not anymore.
Yeah.
I'm doing that full service thing again for Steve from Georgia Stan too, because there's a ton of Kaneka in Georgia.
Yeah, we're going to have a sausage party. Oh, man. You know what's so funny, and you have alluded and outright said it so many times now. I mean, a rational person just coming off the street and looking at this healthcare issue would say, well, you know what? Maybe we just need to just take care of this. We already have the infrastructure is set up. And you know what? I think the insurance industry, if they really thought outside the box, a lot of people don't use online. A lot of old people, they're not comfortable online, especially now with this hacking. There's going to be a lot of mail-in stuff. They can retool, redeploy for processing, processing mail things. Because we just need full coverage for everybody. Because, we don't live in a bubble. And it's not fair in this wonderful nation we have to have people sick walking around you with communicable diseases. It's like big. That's only one side of it. The other side is individual. You know, people don't deserve this. There's so much money in this country. Look how much money we spent on some bullshit. Between 51 and 60 million dollars for nothing to make this weirdo. And I hadn't even brought him up, see, to make the weirdo look good. But you say you don't have money for healthcare. We have all the money we want to. Plus the fact we make our own money. So it's a bunch of it's a bullshit ass argument. Sorry. And I want my goddamn weed. That's all I could fucking say.
Amen to that. And I can't blame you.
Hey, man, you're doing a great job.
And by the way, Steve from Georgia Stan has access to Kaneka. Yeah, we're gonna form a little mini Kaneka cult inside the Horn community.
I want to let you know, because I'm thinking that sounds good, because any little oil that's in that sauce is going to leach into the peppers. I mean, kebabs are shit.
Yeah, no, this is so good. Yeah, for the kebabs, I'd say get the Cajun variety. You'll be glad. My personal preference is the hot and spicy. Just is. All right, Todd, you have yourself a good evening, man. Just trying to help. Just full service radio program here.
Thanks, Bob. Take care.
All right, we'll see you. I know. Yeah, I confess, I was ogling that. I was ogling that Acorn Kamado cooker. It is that season. It is that time of year. But then again, I got to figure out what I could. What could I put on the smoker that wouldn't make me, scream? So that's it. And understand that, Todd asked me what the situation is. I told him. I mean, that's not me. That's not me pissing and moaning. That's just my reality and the reality of millions of other American citizens. I got a problem that can't be addressed. It's not terminal. It could be fixed with access to appropriate medical care. But it's not like I can run out and buy health insurance, because you can only do that for 2 weeks in December on days that don't have R's in them, while wearing an orange hat with blue polka dots. with one hand in the air and your tongue held the throat. Because free market. Which is not to say I hate the Affordable Care Act. I don't. I just hate that the Affordable Care Act was designed not so much... It's kind of like what I was saying about advertising and broadcasting. Remember? Commercial broadcasting is designed to deliver potential customers to the sellers of goods, and whatever happens in between the ads is, who cares? Well, it's the same way with healthcare in the United States. The healthcare system in the United States is not designed to deliver healthcare to people who live in the United States. It is designed to deliver potential healthcare consumers to insurance providers. And the insurance providers, in turn, do everything in their power to try to provide as little as possible so as to maximize their profits. That's why there were some tweaks in the Affordable Care Act to try to address that. Things like, you know, what percentage of overall intake could be devoted to things that weren't the delivery of health care. I think it's capped at 20%. And so, you know, there I am, and there are several millions of other Americans. Now, I do. I happen to live in West Virginia. And that means the number of people who could do what needs to be done under my fairly unique circumstances is tiny. And those people do not deal with my sorts of problem on a regular and routine basis, which is kind of key to successful outcomes. So that's where it is. And, you know, maybe by December, when that window of opportunity opens, but understand the coverage that's available in West Virginia is not great. You know, huge deductibles, that kind of thing. So that's where that all is. Okay, but that's enough of that. By the way, time for thanks to go out. We have taken a bite out of some fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly. To Charlene for getting us started, taking us down to 175. Followed by Kitty in Boston, who took us down to 165 and said, "My message, stop telling Bob he's going to lose supporters, Sean. I'm with Clarence. Just move on, sir." Signed, Kitty in Boston. And so that leaves... 165 to go. Thank you. Thank you, Kitty, and thank you, Charlene. Thank you oh so very, very much. What else for this Moran Monday? Well, your nominations, for starters, and your calls at 304-663-4676, the stress line, 304-663-HORN. 304-574-8178 is the other line, and then Skype to Skype from all over the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. Again, on Skype, if you've never done it before, send me a contact request, and we'll be conversing before you even know it. And it's just us, after all. Subject line, pain, coming from James, usually comes as the result of accidents. Accidents are usually the result of stupidity, often someone else's. I speak from an abundance of experience. Oh, yeah. That's what, in many instances, what workers' comp's about, which is why Joe Manchin, when he was governor of West Virginia, had to destroy our publicly funded
workers' compensation scheme and turn it into a for-profit money-making business for his pals. Yep. Another note, got a note for this Moran Monday from Robert in Australia. Moran nomination. I'd like to nominate my prime minister, the Honorable Mr. Malcolm Turnbull. He's in India at the moment, telling the head of the Adani Group that the issue of native title over the area that they want to turn into Australia's biggest coal mine will soon be resolved. Just like the Native Americans at Standing Rock and other locations in the USA, the wishes of Native Australians not to have their land dug up and shipped off will disappear under various legal decisions. And despite growing resistance here in Australia, the federal Liberal government seems determined to add as much carbon as possible to the air we all breathe. Jabs, jabs, jabs. Cry the economy. Harumps. Exactly. Signed, Robert from Oz. Funny how the clear-eyed, clear-thought, fully considered wishes of the people who have been living on the land for, few millennia. Funny how they get such damn short shrift. Ah, Devin knew what I meant with turning West Virginia's workers' compensation plan, publicly funded workers' compensation, into a for-profit scam. Devin said simply, "Oh, fucking Brick Street." That's the name of it, by the way. Brick Street Insurance. And they've got a monopoly. Fun, huh? Yeah. And it's worth noting, I think Progress had the piece earlier today, that while a lot of us look toward Canada as sort of a be-all and end-all for what we would like to think are liberal policies, that it ain't necessarily so when it comes to environmental issues. Not by a long shot. Because, I'm looking for it. Where is it? Well, maybe it wasn't Think Progress. But that, in fact, Canada leaves a lot to be desired in terms of the degree of control that they have or that they cede to energy interests. And all you got to do is ask somebody in the tar sands hellscape and they can tell you. Or maybe ask some folks in British Columbia who were downstream of the massive poison sludge outbreak last year. Yeah. And once again, it's a matter of indigenous people getting run over. But at least they refuse to go quietly. And in the long run, maybe that builds the momentum and the quantum of energy necessary for the pushback. By the way, I put a couple of bucks of fuel in the vehicle the other day. Well, yesterday, maybe. And I noticed that my gas prices at the pump had jumped a dime on the news of our very expensive fireworks display in Syria. Somebody's got to pay for those missiles.
right? Right. And where the going rate had been $1 million a shot, I was watching some news program the other day, and they quoted $4 million now. That would be some tomahawk inflation. Yeah. So let's run over to the stress line and check in with Charlie in Tennessee. Hey, Charlie, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. You were talking about health care. My doctor recommended I get a colonoscopy. And basically, I live alone. And if you live alone, if there's nobody to take you to wherever you're going to have a procedure done, the doctors will just let you die. They don't want to deal with you. They say it's a liability issue, and I just flat told the doctor. I said, my mother's dead, my father's dead, I have no children, I live alone. And I said, I'm the last of the Mohicans, trust me, if anything happens to me, there's not going to be anybody left for you to be liable to. And they still didn't want to do
well, they don't want, what it is, Charlie, is they don't want you on the road.
Well, no, I mean, I could get a, they will not let you use anything like Uber or a taxi cab.
Really?
Really.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And I just think it's a shame that it's come to that. You know, I can get a cab and go.
So tell them to hold you in triage until they determine you're sober enough to drive home.
Well, I really don't want to do that. That would be endangering people's lives because, you know, the stuff that they use on you when they give you a colonoscopy, you can literally just go to sleep and not realize you're asleep.
Wait, hold on here. Yeah, I mean... No, I mean, what they do is they tell you, you know, don't operate heavy machinery for 24 hours. Say, cool, stick me in a bed for 24 hours after it's done, and then I'll go home the next morning.
Well, my insurance won't do that.
Right, so the problem isn't the doctor. The problem is the insurance.
And there's really nowhere that, you know, I doubt if the hospital would even want to provide a room for 24 hours or whatnot. I mean, this is an outpatient procedure. It just, you know, and you know, I asked the doctor, I said, what happens if I have a heart attack or something? I said, what are you going to do, just watch me die? And basically, he just said, yeah. He said, you know, you have to have somebody to bring you to the hot, to bring you to the emergency room and then come get you and take you home. Not come get you, but stay with you while the procedure's being done and bring you back home.
And that's about half dictated by the insurance companies and half dictated by the medical malpractice insurance carriers.
Yeah. I mean, people need to, you know, this needs to be good public knowledge because I think there's a lot of people out there that just don't realize how things are run. I mean, even if you have the best insurance in the world, if you don't have anybody that's going to sit there, like, well, take, for instance, a colonoscopy. If you don't have anybody, some doctors will. Now, whenever I lived in Louisville, Kentucky, a coworker of mine took me and dropped me off. And then they had to call the coworker to come get me. They wouldn't let me call him. And, you know, that worked out okay. But there was another doctor up there that said, no, somebody's got to stay with you. And I just, you know, I couldn't believe it.
You know, it makes me wonder if there's some sort of beyond belief. And the problem is I doubt if there's anything resembling legal recourse. I just had a note from Aquila over via Skype saying, Charlie's right. They don't want a taxi to drive you. I'm having cataracts fixed, and luckily I have a neighbor. It's all about taking you home, but no one said anything about the procedure. My heart operation didn't require me to be taken to the hospital or to wait for me outside while I had the operation in 2009. Could be that's all changing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Barkway in the chat room, Barkway says, "Oh, Bob, don't tell me about insurance and how you have to fight for everything. It's my daily existence now." Barkway is listening from the hospital as we speak.
Yeah, I mean, some people, this is something that needs to be got out into the public, especially to these overly religious holy rollers that think that everything's just fine, well, and dandy. I mean, I couldn't sit there and watch somebody die.
No. Yeah, you'd do something.
Yeah.
And the question then arises, what happens in civilized countries? What happens in the NHS with situations like this in Great Britain? What happens in the Scandinavian countries? What happens in Germany, France, Italy, Australia? What happens in Japan? Because this is pure capitalist madness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. I completely understand before somebody says that I don't. I understand the safety aspect of, because I've been through these things and Agnes has driven me home. And while you can get out to the, maybe you can go under your own steam all the way out to the car, that stuff will wear you out. I forget what it's called, but what they used on me is that stuff they laughingly refer to as milk of amnesia.
Yeah.
And, you're kind of okay, but you're not sober, and you do not need to be driving anywhere.
No, no.
So I got no fight with that. But
if you take a taxi cab, you're not driving.
Right. You're not going to plow into a school bus.
But the medical profession says, no, we're not going. And what it is the medical profession, we have enough of those people in our legislature. We have enough of them in, just different positions of authority in the government where they can do just about anything they want to. And, that's a shame. I mean, if you want to be a doctor, that's fine. But when you start, when you start corrupting things with absolute power, that's wrong. I mean, I was just stunned.
Well, it used to be like ambulance companies would maintain ambulatory care transports.
Yeah.
Which is like a high-priced taxi.
Yeah.
But I think because of changes in the way that Medicare and Medicaid pay, those things went the way of all flesh some several years ago. I can be corrected if I'm wrong.
But, I just can't understand why I can't get a taxi, go there, then sedate me up, and do their colonoscopy, look around, see if they find any tumors or polyps or anything, and if they don't, then wake me up. And then I don't even care if they call the Uber driver. If they don't trust me, they can call the Uber driver or the taxi driver, and I'll just hop in a taxi and go home. And there's one doctor even went so far as to say, well, we'd rather have somebody with you. And I told him, I said, I live alone. I'm sorry. That's
wishful thinking on your part. Sure. On the doctor's part, some people simply don't live in reality. Some people don't understand that not everybody has family around them.
Everybody wants to know where my family is. And I said, they're in East Lawn Cemetery in Kingsport, Tennessee. So, it's, I'm, Yeah, pretty much. I'm the only one that's left in the family. Well, I've got a sister and brother, but they live halfway across the United States. One of them lives in South Carolina, and the other one lives in Colorado.
Well, the immediate problem is to solve your problem. And toward that end, you know, if you're talking to medical staff, maybe because if you need it, you need it, okay? Colon cancer is a terrible... There aren't a lot of good ways to die. Colon cancer is a terrible way to die.
Oh, yeah, it metastasizes into your liver and everywhere else.
And so it's preventable. It is, you know, with something like a colonoscopy. And so maybe call the social work department. Because there's a chance that hospital social work people have answers that the medical staff never even think about, because that's not their job.
Well, you know, I have dealt with doctors. I was like I've told you before. I was born with cerebral palsy, and there was one doctor that said, "Well, we can go in and make tiny incisions in the muscle, and the muscle will stretch out in the back of your leg to compensate for the short ligaments." And, you know, basically $500 later out of my pocket, that was my deductible, the guy just kept charging me. And, you know, his office staff said, "Well, you owe this money." And I said, "Well, the insurance companies told me I've met my deductible." And they wanted that money right then, so I just went ahead and paid them. It was $128 or something. And finally, I got a refund about 6 months later. I guess after their accountants went through their books or whatnot yearly and found that. But, I mean, you know, the guy told me that, you know, we've got this surgery that can correct this, and then he didn't want to do it.
Damn.
And I'm not very impressed with the medical profession. And, you know, I've got insurance, and I'm fortunate enough to have insurance, and I pay what I'm owed.
Well, what you're running up against, Charlie, is the impact of capitalism on the medical profession.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that, and you know, the business with who takes you home after a colonoscopy. Like I said, call the social work department of that hospital, and say, you know, I can't be the first person that you've ever dealt with like this, and this is the runaround I'm getting downstairs. Now, help me solve the problem.
Yeah.
It might get the job done.
I don't know. I don't know. I just wonder what happens to people that are, you know, I guess I've been pretty fortunate in my life. I mean, I've always been fortunate enough to be employed and all, but I mean, what about people that have a condition where they can't be employed? I wonder how they get around all this and all.
I don't know.
I mean, what do they? You know, it's like this Trump care that they came up with. I mean, basically, it's like Alan Grayson says: die quickly. Don't get sick. If you do die, if you do get sick, die quickly. And that's, you know, I mean, that tells me a lot about Donald Trump right there. And it tells me a lot about Paul Ryan. And I'm just not impressed with these people.
You shouldn't be, because they are, let's say that if Paul Ryan fell overboard on a pleasure cruise in shark-infested waters, the sharks wouldn't eat him. You know why? Professional courtesy.
Well, I mean, back where I come from, I mean, back in the, whenever I was growing up, I started to grammar school in 59. And, you know, back where I came from, up in the mountains of East Tennessee, I mean, you know, I don't mean to offend anybody, but anybody like Donald Trump, we would have called him just plain white trash. I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, I don't think you've offended anybody, Charlie, given the nature of our community. I don't think so at all. And, you know, once upon a time, I used to, you know, one of the things that was kind of impressive about us hillbillies was that we got chumped a couple of times, and then we became very, very suspicious of outsiders bearing gifts. But that's all over.
Yep.
You know, because he came through here and whispered sweet nothings, and I really do mean nothing, in our ears. And we said, hey, look, that looks like pretty good cover for the racists that we are. So they went out and voted for him in droves. Well, not droves. I mean, the turnout still wasn't worth a damn, but, you know. But well, you get my meaning. Well, Charlie, good luck. Keep us posted. Check, like I said, check with the social work department. And secondarily, check and see if there's like your ambulance companies, even ask them. Maybe there's a reference to like a caregiver transport or something for people who don't need an ambulance. And then you can have a fight with your insurance company to make the sons of bitches pay for it.
Okie doke. Well, I'll catch you later, and I appreciate the time on there.
All right. You take care, Charlie.
Thank you.
Be good now.
Uh-huh.
Bye. Our buddy Charlie calling from Tennistan. And these are the things that bedevil people. And these are the things that sick people don't need to think about. Note coming from Robert in Australia, coming home after hospital. Robert says, I've had two heart stents put in. On both occasions, I was kept in hospital overnight, hooked up to the machine that goes ping. Python fan, Robert. Bing! I was checked out by two doctors working together the next day. I was given the all clear, and I went home in a taxi. Generally, the hospital likes for someone to come and get you, but as I was up and walking, they let me go, with instructions that should I experience any chest pain, to phone for an ambulance. Right, so, because, you know, there's a fine line of sorts. We've figured out, or science says it's figured out, that the less time you spend in a hospital, the better off you are. If it's not absolutely necessary. On the other hand, if you need it, you need it. But the insurance companies get hold of, hey, look, it says the less time you spend in the hospital, better. Let's make sure nobody spends any time in hospital. I might get that 24-karat gold-plated shower curtain with my Christmas bonus this year. Capitalist pricks. Could it be? I think it is. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob. How the hell are you?
I'm feeling frisky. It's Monday.
Oh. Actually, I'm just tuning in. I heard, what was the gentleman's name that just hung up?
That's Charlie.
Charlie, yeah. Same thing out here. They won't even let, because they don't make people wait for you for a colonoscopy or in-office procedure or anything like that, outpatient. But they'll make some, see, the thing is with a cab, because I'm like, well, why don't they just let the driver come and get you? They won't even, you know, because like in my cab, because, you know, I drive.
Oh, I mean, you've got some expertise here. This could be helpful.
Right. Now, typically, you know, I have gone to pick up people after a procedure. I've parked my cab. I've gone up to the doctor's office and, you know, walked the person down, got them in my cab, and taken them home. And this is, I've been driving cabs now for, 10 years. It's been in the last couple of years that they stopped doing that. I don't know why. Because, as a matter of fact, Jan had to have a colonoscopy a little while ago, and she was like, she was just going to call a cab because I had to work. And they're like, nope, you can't call a cab anymore. You actually have to have a family member or a friend come up, sign you out, and they have to come down, you know, do the whole, like, you're being discharged from the hospital. Now, here's the only problem. I mean, like, okay, so Kaiser, they, you know, like you said, more than likely will have social service social worker or what have you on staff because it's Kaiser. However, like when I had my colonoscopy, I had it at a private clinic. So the chances of them actually having a social worker on staff is not happening. So what do you do in those, you know, so what do you do in those cases?
Right. And what do you do in Charlie's case when you're all there is?
Right. When you
no spouse, no son, no daughter, no cousin, no aunt, no uncle, no neighbor.
Right. And then on top of the case, like having somebody said, well, you could have, well, it's like I'm having a fight right now. It's just really when people say stupid shit. So I'm a member of Weight Watchers. Everybody know I'm losing weight, blah, blah, blah. So they have this new thing just called Weight Watchers Fresh. And I canceled it because I didn't really like the food I cook. I'm like, I just wanted to try it. But they sent me food anyway. And so I called and I said, well, I canceled this. So, and I'm like, I canceled it because I didn't like the food. And the woman's like, well, maybe you could enjoy it with a friend. I'm like, enjoy it with those stupid answers that customer service reps say to you, right? It's like, what friend am I going to, who am I?
I get it. I mentioned it last week. I'm still kind of on it. I still want to know who had the bright idea there in management at Arby's to hire an Indian call center to field questions about cooked cow.
Right. Exactly. It's like,
and then they tweet you back from their customer service hotline and you get to laugh again because again, somebody wasn't paying attention. Their customer service Twitter is at Arby's Cares. But because I'm one of those word-knowing people, I just glance
right.
at it, and I look up, and I read it as Arby Scares.
Right. It's Arby Scares. Right. Because that's how it spells. That's how it spells out. And so, like you said, you get these people who, I think there are good intentions at some point with customer service, or when people are answering questions.
Yeah, but then management gets involved and they bring in the accountancy department and they go, well, you know, this is going to affect our share profit out at the 32nd decimal place. So we, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like you get to that point where at what point do the people, do people matter? And as we all know, people don't matter. Because,
people matter when they are paying money. That's when people
money.
Matter. In a capitalist system, Tracy, people matter when they are giving corporations their money.
And when you go on Facebook and Twitter and do a Twitter tantrum and you start calling, you know, Weight Watchers or your insurance company, I cannot tell you how many times I have gone on the Twitter and the Facebook or what have you on tirades about, because they don't see, it's one thing to go off on your phone to that customer service rep in India or the Philippines, because that's just between you and the person recording it and the customer service rep. Nobody and the unfortunate people around you who are hearing that phone call. But it's a whole different matter, especially if you have a couple of followers that are, when you go on your Facebook page and you tag people like Verizon or Weight Watchers or Mutual of Omaha or Kaiser or whoever the case, whoever has pissed you off enough that you've gone on Facebook to go off, and then it gets sent over to your Twitter feed. And you make sure you go and find whatever their Twitter handle is, and you make sure you put that on your Facebook feed as well. And then all of a sudden, remember when nobody would call you from management?
Suddenly you're Miss Popularity, right? Well, I mean, that's like the, and it was a tiny thing. Look, it was just one of those Joe Pesci moments, okay? You remember the line, they fuck you at the drive-thru. Well, they did.
Yes.
I wasn't eating anything, but I was getting food, bringing it home, and they screwed me out of one of my meals. Just flat out didn't provide it, so I got on Twitter and said, you know, and actually I didn't get it. I just called them. That's how I found out there was an Arby's customer service hotline for beef problems in India.
Holy cow.
And
Yes, I did say holy cow.
So, and for all I know, the Indian woman that I talked to, maybe she was Muslim.
Maybe she could
identify with, you know, chowing down on a good burger.
She could fuck up a burger, but don't be messing with no pork. She won't be swining and dieting.
Right. And see, that's the point. To me, the idea of having an Arby's call center in India is right up there with having an Oscar Mayer call center in Tel Aviv.
Right. Exactly. Or Farmer John. Same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm calling about the bacon.
I have a complaint about bacon.
But the thing is,
or chitlins.
So here's, but you know, and again, how does this make financial sense, except for the fact that people are being paid next to nothing in India. So by way of satisfaction, they say, well, we're going to send you a gift card for a free meal at Arby's in hopes that blah 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 blah. And I, okay, that's fine. Because, you know, I wasn't calling to make anybody miserable. I was just saying, you know, tighten these people up down there. Store number, time, date, you know. Because it was obvious that they weren't into what they were doing for, you know, $8 an hour. There's a karmic debt involved, and I know it, and I'm going to pay for it. But it was, you know, like being stolen from. So
it's not like being stolen from. It is that you paid for something, you didn't get it. You were stolen from.
Exactly. So here's how it works. I talked to Lady in India on Sunday. The following Friday, I get the gift card, complete with a form, we're sorry, we hope we can earn your business back with a free roast beef sandwich letter, from Atlanta, Georgia.
What? You talk to India, and then you get your sandwich, your letter from Atlanta, Georgia.
So it took, and it takes 3 days to get a letter from Atlanta to here. It takes 3 days to get a letter from anywhere to anywhere in the United States most of the time.
Yep.
So that means it took from Monday and Tuesday for that to make it through the bureaucracy so it could go into the mail in Atlanta on Wednesday and land in my mailbox on Friday or Saturday. Corporate America. Jesus God.
What?
This is the kind of genius stuff you get when somebody goes and gets an MBA at Harvard.
Right. And you're thinking to yourself, first of all, like the other day, I had to go off at Credit One Bank. And I wound up calling the Philippines. And I'm like, you know, no disrespect to my brothers and sisters in the Philippines, but I'm sorry. When I'm having an issue, they're doing the best to understand me, and I'm doing my best to understand them, but I'm having a financial situation, and it's a crisis about my credit card. I get really tired when I have to repeat myself because you don't understand me, and you don't understand me because I'm not speaking to somebody in America.
Right, I've been there, Tracy. And it goes a little like this. Hey, I just want to let you know, I really respect you because you speak multiple languages and I only speak one. And so I really appreciate the effort you've put into learning English, and you've done a great job, but I've really got a big problem here, and we got to escalate back to the United States, please.
And that is basically, you say it nicer than I did.
Well, it's worked. It's worked for me.
it's because and that's and therein I because I'm like and I get to and that's where I get to that point where I'm like, you need to send me back to the United States because you're not understanding what I'm saying. And then I'm getting more and more frustrated because I've spent 45 minutes trying to talk to this person. And usually I'm on my cell phone, which means I'm using my minutes.
Well, the other part of that, Tracy, is have you ever done call center work?
Yes, I have. Okay. I have.
So, you know, it's just...
I appreciate that.
So, you know, it's just a shitload of scripts. You know, you press Alt, you know, Alt F1 for happy customer, Alt F2 for pissed off, Alt F3 for call the police.
Right.
I mean, I'm generalizing, but nobody who answers that initial call has any authority at all to do shit.
None.
Their job is to get you to hang up unsatisfied. That's why, you know, that's why there's a 15-minute wait in the first place, because you go, ah, fuck it. It's called, in some corners, it's called the lump it factor, where the consumer will just lump it. Take their licks and just realize that they're just a tiny pawn in a giant game, and so whatever. And so usually you've got to, I was surprised that the lady I talked to, wherever she was, I was surprised she had the authority to send me a complimentary free meal gift card.
Well, I think there's certain levels, and I think when, like you said, they have the authority, I think they have a certain authority to do certain things. Like when I called, when I first called Weight Watchers to complain, because I called the company that's doing the food, and they said their supervisor, I called on Thursday, and so the supervisor was in the meeting, and I gathered that they're still in the meeting because I still haven't heard from the supervisor. When I called today, I was on hold, and then I went to voicemail, so now I'm really pissed. So when I called, when I called Weight Watchers, of course, I got the Philippines. And I'm like, okay, I need to speak to a supervisor because I'm not going to go back. I'm not going to go through this. And so when I spoke to a supervisor, she authorized to give me a month free of Weight Watchers, but I'm not still satisfied because this food basically cost me $100. And a month of Weight Watchers does not cost $100. So I'm not going to be done and satisfied until I get the equivalent of how much this food cost me. And so she's going to escalate my situation to the next level, and then I have to wait for her, you know, corporate to call. But I guess at each level, they have a certain, you know, amount of authority to do certain things to keep the customer at bay. But first of all, why, like you said, they send all of these call centers overseas. I think about my aunt who used to work for AT&T. Same thing. She used to work at an AT&T call center. Her job got shipped over to the Philippines. And nothing worse than trying to get off. Like I said, I'm just calling to check on something. I don't care. If it's nothing that's, you know, life-threatening or anything like that, if I'm just calling to check my balance, or what if money has posted to my account, you know, simple stuff. I'm not tripping. But typically, I don't have to call for simple stuff because I can go online and check. When I do have to call and make a look, if I ever have to call customer service about something, I have a problem. And if I have a problem, it's not going to do me any good if I'm speaking to someone who does not understand what I'm saying, and then it's just going to piss me off even further that I'm talking to somebody, and like you said, and they're, you know, if my personal favorite, I really understand what you're saying, and I do apologize for that trouble, and then they keep repeating the thing. Do you get that when they get into that?
There are moments when that drives me absolutely batshit.
When they get into that loop, I understand, and I apologize.
And you know, and somebody, and some paid psychologist has been got a contract to come up with that language.
Right. And I'm like, what?
Well, I'm certainly sorry for the problem you're. I'm certainly sorry for the problem you're experiencing, and I certainly understand your frustration.
No, you don't, Dad. Because if you understood my frustration, you wouldn't be saying that over and over again.
Ta-da!
And that's because, see, and that's when you. That's when I have to think about, you know, toning it down. And I'm like, okay, what? You know, that's when. That's when you get to that line. When you decide how much of this do you, how far do you want to take this? Do you, well, you can't go all angry black woman on them, but, well, we'll angry, because it's a two-pronged thing, or a double-edged sword. Because sometimes angry black woman gives me what I want, and then sometimes angry black woman gives me nothing. So, you know, you got to know when to finesse that. You know what I'm saying? Or, and even in your case, when does the angry get you what you want, or the angry get you nothing?
Well, I maybe I'm a little bit different, Tracy.
Oh, you're nice.
I default to nice because you got people who are doing shitty jobs for shitty pay.
Right.
And it's only after I get, but you know, let the bullshit meter go up a little bit, and game on. Or let me try.
Oh, right.
Let me ask to be escalated. You know, send me up the. You know, we're just going to climb the ladder here. No offense. Thank you very kindly. Let's go. And they try to run me around. Then I get a little pushy.
Oh yes. Yeah, so, no. When I'm talking to that first, when I, you know, because like you said, there's levels. And when I, you know, once I get to that level of the, you know, once I get past that first, the third level, the first, second level. When I get to that person, when I know you can make a decision, and then you start pulling off that bullshit, well, you know, I'm sorry if, you know, I'm not, if we're not reaching or what have you, or whatever bullshit they try to pull on you, that's when you get angry. No. I don't get, because before I get that to that anger point, that's when I said, okay, you know what? We're not getting anywhere. We're going around in a circle. You're getting up. I know you can't get up.
I remember one night when Ferg watched me spend 2 hours. It was a Sunday night. Ferg watched me spend 2 hours climbing through the corporate ladder, the corporate customer service ladder with DirecTV, who, incidentally,
ooh,
are awful. No, Dish Network. Dish Network.
Oh no, I've never dealt with.
And I find, and I finally, it took me a while, but I finally got flown back across from India to the United States. and it cost me 2 hours of my life.
But it was worth it.
And I explained it in no uncertain terms that they were stealing 2 hours of my life from me, and how would they like it if I did that to them? And eventually, I got the problem solved and a little bit of, you know, compensation for the effort I had to expend in getting something done that I was in the right in the first place. Then, however, because more and Monday and just a few minutes left, then there's United Airlines.
No.
Did you see this one today, Tracy? Tracy? This is not happening again, is it? Tracy? Then there's United Airlines. Yep, we lost Tracy. Damn it. Okay. Maybe I'll get Tracy back. United Airlines is, short of gunpoint, I don't think you could get me on a United Airlines flight. A couple of weeks ago, it was the leggings shaming incident, in which people decided, well, okay, I mean, they were flying for free, so United Airlines can make them wear a fucking burqa if they want to. They've got rules, damn it, there's rules. Yeah. These 2 10-year-old little girls are flying as representatives of United Airlines, so they can't be wearing leggings that show the outlines of their little female filthy legs, because they're representing United Airlines.
You know, little girls in leggings are not United Airlines' problem. United Airlines is United Airlines' problem. United Airlines overbooked a flight from Chicago to Louisville, Kentucky. It was flight 3411. Now, the passengers didn't overbook it. United Airlines overbooked it, because they do that to make sure that every plane flies as near to full as possible. So the flight attendant gets on the microphone and says,
This flight has been overbooked. Can I have, please, 4 volunteers who will take the next flight in exchange for... Then thank you for flying United Airlines.
Nobody volunteers, because everybody wants to get where they're going.
Okay. Nobody volunteered. So we're going to let the computer do it.
According to United Airlines, after our team looked for volunteers, one customer refused to leave the aircraft voluntarily, and law enforcement was asked to come to the gate.
Let's see what the video audio gives us.
Come on.
Hey, you busted his lip.
Oh my God, look at what you did to him.
Good work. Way to go.
Oh my God.
The big heroic Chicago cops came onto the plane, grabbed a 69-year-old Asian guy because I guess it was his time. Bashed his mouth against the armrest, and then dragged him down the aisle of the plane to get him off the plane when he was already in a seat. It really... He boarded the plane, he was in a seat, and then United says, 4 passengers have to leave to make room for United employees who had to travel to Louisville. The 69-year-old Asian man was a doctor who had to be at work the very next morning to treat patients. Meanwhile, the Chicago Police Department said at approximately 6 p.m., a 69-year-old male Asian airline passenger became irate after he was asked to disembark from a flight that was oversold. The passenger in question began yelling to voice his displeasure, at which point aviation police were summoned. Aviation officers arrived on scene and attempted to carry the individual off the flight when he fell. His head subsequently struck an armrest, causing injuries to his face. The man was taken to Lutheran General Hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. Ongoing investigation. Chicago Police Department, Office of Communications. United spokesman Charlie Hobart said, "We followed the right procedures. That plane had to depart. We wanted to get our customers to their destinations. Just not the 69-year-old doctor who needed to treat patients the next day because, you know, Asian." I mean, it's not lost on me that it's not some white guy that the big burly cops are dragging off, but a fairly smallish, scrawny
69-year-old Asian guy who can't defend himself. Oscar Munoz, on the other hand, CEO of United Airlines, said, "This is an upsetting event to all of us here at United. I apologize for having to reaccommodate these customers. Our team is moving with a sense of urgency to work with the authorities and conduct our own detailed review of what happened. We're also reaching out to this passenger to talk directly to him and further address and resolve this situation." Anybody blame this guy? He goes, "Fuck you, talk to my lawyer." This is the paranoia that attaches to a fascist state. Plain and simple. So we're out of here. Thanks, everybody. We'll try to raise another $165 tomorrow evening, just to keep the lights on. Thank you very kindly, one and all. Thanks for our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. And thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And yes, thank you to everyone who spends their precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.